formed form resembling his own, resembling Krishna's own form, like a Vishnu-type form, and said, you can keep this form eternally. You'll never die. And you can become an eternal associate of Lord Shiva. So such mercy Banasura got just on the spot, and only because Lord Shiva had intervened. Otherwise Krishna was going to kill him. So Narada Muni said that this proves that you're very dear to the Lord and that he's extremely kindly disposed to you. He doesn't take you as an offender. Then Narada Muni gave another example. Actually, Narada Muni said that sometimes you give boons to demons who either want to attack the Lord based on the boon or harass the Lord's devotees based on the boon. But you are so clever that you give these boons in such a way that the demons think they just got a very nice boon, and now they can kill the Lord or kill his devotees. But actually there are loopholes in the boons, so they don't work. So he gives the example of Kalayavana. You probably heard of Kalayavana. He attacked Mathura. And isn't it? No. That was Krishna as the Ranchor, right? With Kalayavana? Yeah. Kalayavana, it seemed like he was defeating Krishna. Krishna ran away, took him into the cave of Muchakunda, and Muchakunda incinerated him, right? That was Kalayavana. Now this Kalayavana, his background is that there is one sage named Garga Muni. Now he's actually a very famous Brahmin, but he had a son named Gargya, who was a bit of a demon. Yeah. So this Gargya, he wanted a son who could kill the Yadavas. So he prayed to Lord Shiva for that. And Lord Shiva seemed to give him that benediction that he could have a son who was Kalayavana, who could kill the Yadavas. But he wasn't able to kill them. He was only able to frighten them and frustrate them a bit. And in the end, he was killed. So there was like a type of loophole in that benediction. It wasn't as complete as it seemed to be. Then, Jayadratha, he was also a worshipper of Shiva. He prayed to Lord Shiva, please empower me to kill the Pandavas. So Lord Shiva, he said, he gave some benediction like that. He said, you can be considered to have more mercy because they see the Lord, whereas in the material world, the pure devotees do not always see the Lord. So therefore, even though they're equal, but still the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, they do have a special position even compared to the pure devotees in the material world, just on that one ground that they're able to see the Lord. When it comes to someone like Prabhupada, they would come to get his association. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, Prabhupada, yeah, they would come to get his association and to help. Yeah, it's not that there would be anything wrong with them thinking that they could help Prabhupada. because devotees want to serve other devotees, so they would come to help Prabhupada in the mood of being his servants, like that. That's their mood. They just see themselves as servants of the servants. So it's nice. And they'll also maybe come and help other devotees who really need help. You know, Prabhupada, he didn't really need help in a sense. But, you know, the ordinary devotees or aspiring devotees, the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, according to Lord Shiva, they sometimes come and they intervene and they help as they're trying to preach and spread Krishna consciousness. They do things like that. Yeah. Is that okay? Okay. Yes, please. That Lord Shiva is the head of the Rudra Sampradaya, plus the head of the Mayavad Sampradaya. Is that hard for the members of the Rudra Sampradaya to digest? That's the question. You know, this fact that Lord Shiva, Shankaracharya is Lord Shiva, to my knowledge, it may not be so well known or so much accepted. We accept it. But, you know, where Lord Shiva says that, or, you know, where that whole pastime takes place, where the Lord asks him to do that, he doesn't give his name. You know, it's not like totally clear that he's going to become Shankaracharya as such. But to my understanding, I don't know so much about the other sampradayas in detail, but to my understanding, it is mainly more our Sampradaya, who accept Shankaracharya as that incarnation of Lord Shiva. And frankly, I don't even know what the Rudra Sampradaya people think. In fact, you know, who's the Acharya of the Rudra Sampradaya? Is that Vishnu Swami? Vishnu Swami. Because that Sampradaya is more or less defunct, really. Yeah. It's hardly existing now. You know, really the only way it's existing is the followers of Vallabhacharya in Gujarat. But they don't really recognize Vishnu Swami. They don't really recognize themselves so much as being members of that Sampradaya. So anyway, I'm not really aware how they would think about that point. Sorry. And Mother Vishak. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So, yesterday, Lord Shiva explained how the inhabitants of Vaikuntha are the greatest recipients of the mercy of the Lord. And in the meantime, just an interesting little reflection arose. The different reasons that Lord Shiva was giving were all about how the inhabitants of Vaikuntha engaged in pure devotional service in different ways. And it included that they sometimes take birth in devotee families. They sometimes make different arrangements to help the devotees. And they sometimes help the devotees to preach. And we gave the example of them coming, of Narada Muni himself coming and appearing to Srila Prabhupada at least twice in preaching programs. But also we know that Narada Muni has come as a preacher. He himself is an inhabitant of Vaikuntha. He is one of these specific people, resident of Vaikuntha. And he is famous as one of the greatest preachers. And he has descended. He has preached to Prahlad Maharaj, who he's just about to visit. In fact, he is the spiritual master of Prahlad Maharaj. He preached to Dhruva Maharaj. And of course, it's an allegorical story, but, well, no, he preached to Prachinabarhi, isn't it? Not to Paranja. He preached to Prachinabarhi. Yeah, and many others. So he has descended to preach. So that's an interesting point, just a reflection on how the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, they do intervene, they involve themselves in with the devotees in this world and in different ways. And even they actually come and preach themselves. And when they do, like Narada Muni, his preaching has a very amazing impact because he's a very amazing devotee. So here we are now. Narada Muni has gone to Sutala Loka. Now, Sutala Loka, that is within this material world. That is within this material world. So Prahlad Maharaj, he's famous, he's been referred to here as like the ideal Vaikuntha Vasi, that he himself is living within the material world in a sense. He's living there in Sutala. So Narada Muni goes then from Shiva Loka, which is beyond the material world, he goes back into the material world, to Sutala. But, of course, we understand very clearly that he is going higher, really, in terms, in spiritual terms. He's definitely going higher. So he was so inspired that, the Brihad Bhagavatamrita says, he went, he traveled by the path of the heart. And the purport explains, this means by the speed of the mind, at least, or even faster, to Sutala Loka. And there he saw Prahlad Maharaj meditating. Prahlad Maharaj, he remembers the Lord. This is his particular activity. His specialty is remembering the Lord, meditating on the Lord. So Prahlad, in our study guide on page 8 there, it says that in his mind's eyes he saw Narada Muni coming, yes. So while he was deep in trance and not externally conscious, completely his consciousness was absorbed within, but he became aware that Narada Muni was coming. However, Brihad Bhagavatamrita explains that even though he was aware that Narada Muni was coming and Narada Muni is his spiritual master and he is an immensely respectful disciple, but still, because he was so deeply absorbed in meditation, it took him some time to come back to the point where he could actually greet Narada. And by that time, Narada had landed. And Narada was already dancing very ecstatically and glorifying Prahlad Maharaj. So Prahlad arrived. Narada arrived. Prahlad offered his prostrated dandavats and then took Prahlad, forced him to accept a seat, and then got together the paraphernalia for worshipping him, washing his feet and all the formal requirements for worshipping a very honorable guest. But Narada refused, and he just grabbed hold of Prahlad and embraced him. So then Narada glorified Prahlad, that you are certainly the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy, and gave some very interesting reasons. Some of them are quite extraordinary. Some of them we might expect. Some of them are quite extraordinary. First of all, he says that from childhood you have exhibited love for the Lord such as has never been seen before. Yeah, very extraordinary. Even as a little child, preschool child. For example, in the fourth chapter of the seventh canto, it describes how Prahlad was totally uninterested in childhood playthings and play friends and toys and all that sort of thing. Totally uninterested. And in fact, it's described that if somehow his friends would come and try and invite him to play, he would be turned off so much, he would become silent and dull like a stone and just sort of switch off altogether. It's described there in the fourth chapter of the seventh canto that he was so absorbed in Krishna consciousness, he didn't know how the world was going on around him. He didn't know how his body was going on, sleeping, eating, walking, lying down, talking. He was not conscious of these functions. They were more or less happening automatically, but he was so deeply absorbed internally in remembering the Lord. As we said, remembering is his particular activity. So he was so absorbed like that, that he was actually existing on that internal, eternal, transcendental platform. And sometimes, for no apparent reason, he would just cry. Start crying. Or just start laughing. And sometimes he would just start singing. And no one could understand what has happened to this boy. And sometimes he would see the Lord. And he would just cry out, call out, the Bhagavatam verse says, in full anxiety. He would just call out. Sometimes he would dance. Sometimes he would feel oneness and imitate the pastimes of the Lord. Yes. And sometimes he would feel the touch of the Lord's hand and he would become silent, with his ears standing on end and tears gliding down from his eyes. So Narada says that these symptoms of love of God, they had never really been seen before. This was very extraordinary display of very elevated consciousness. So that was one thing. That was the first thing. And that was from his very early childhood. So because he was so absorbed on that devotional platform, he was able to overcome the most impossible obstacles. Specifically, the harassment of his father, which lesser devotees would not have been able to deal with at all. They would have become bewildered at least at some point. But he remained throughout totally unaffected, as if those things were not happening. Or if they were happening and he was aware of them, then his consciousness of them was totally different from the reality. Srila Prabhupada, in fact, in a lecture, says about Prahlad that sometime one person approached Prahlad and tried to empathize or sympathize. "I'm so sorry you're having such a hard time. Your father is such a demon. He's trying to harm you and kill you." Prahlad, Prabhupada says, Prahlad became surprised and said, "No, he's not doing that. He's my father. He's just playing with me." Yes. So, this is Prahlad. So elevated that it is not like some devotees, advanced devotees, if they're being harassed, they kind of hang in there and, you know, sort of handle it in Krishna consciousness or something. He just, it was like, he was not there really. He was somewhere else. And all these things were just like some sort of fantasy or something, at least you could say, unclear. Because he was absorbed in that transcendental reality with the Lord. So then, Narada goes on that you, Prahlad, you're such a great devotee, that by your influence, all the sons of the demons became devotees. Not just some of them, but there was a revolution in Krishna consciousness there at that school. Total revolution. The teachers would go out of the classroom and, you know, sometimes, at least in my day, I don't know what it's like now, but in my day, when the teacher would go out, sometimes a riot would start in the classroom and, you know, it would just be a whole thing. The teacher would come back, everyone would try to be good. But when the teachers would go out, Prahlad would start a kirtan. Everyone, every single child, after a little while, once they got into it a bit, by his association, every child was just chanting and dancing wildly. And all through the association of Prahlad. And it was not just some ordinary preaching to some ordinary people. These children were staunch demons, born in the staunchest demon families, and they were of that nature actually themselves. Yeah. And in the purport it says that many of them became devotees by his instructions. Some of them, though, they became devotees simply by touching him or seeing him. So he was extremely influential. This is one of the, or very important characteristic of a Mahabhagavat, isn't it, according to Lord Chaitanya? Lord Chaitanya was asked 3 times, 3 years in a row by some devotees, "How do you recognize the most advanced devotee?" First time he said, "Anyone who chants the name of Krishna 1 time in their life is the best of the common people." Then next year they asked the same question. He said, "Anyone who chants Hare Krishna all the time is the best of the devotees." And then next year he was asked the same question and he said, "Anyone who simply by seeing him, other people chant Hare Krishna, he is the best of the devotees." So, this is what happened with Prahlad. He was influencing those children like that. Then, after killing Hiranyakashipu, Lord Nrsingadev, now, Lord Shiva's already mentioned this. Lord Nrsingadev ignored the other demigods, even Lakshmi, who is his wife, actually. She was there. On one hand, she did not feel close enough to the Lord to be able to approach him. On the other hand, he didn't recognize her. But when Prahlad came, then Lord Nrsingadev did not just accept him and speak to him nicely and mercifully, but he put Prahlad on his lap and caressed him just like a mother. So there's a very intimate connection. Although he ignored Brahma, Shiva, and even Lakshmi, when Prahlad offered obeisances to Lord Nrsingadev, the Lord picked him up while he was offering obeisances, put his hand on his head, and licked his entire body like a lioness licks her cub. That is what Brihad Bhagavatamrita says. It's a very deep display of affection. So, then, the Lord, after a little while, they had some exchanges, then the Lord offered a benediction to Prahlad. And Prahlad was not interested in any material thing. He was not interested in liberation. He was not interested in anything other than, he made it very clear, I want to serve you only. And that's all. And eventually, Lord Nrsingadev was insisting and insisting. So Prahlad said, all right, if you really want to offer me a benediction, then grant me the benediction that my father will not have to go to hell. So Lord Nrsingadev said, don't worry. He's already 21 generations before and after you are liberated just because you're such a great devotee. But then the Lord insisted, I want you to become the king. Prahlad didn't want to, but then he accepted. Why did he accept? Simply to help the people. Only. Only to help the people, to protect them, and to help them as devotees. For no other reason. So then Prahlad tells a story, which is something, it's a pastime of his, which we may not be at all familiar with, but one time he went to have darshan of a deity of Lord Narayan called Pitavas, the Lord appearing, Pitavas, the Lord appearing in yellow dress. So he went on pilgrimage to see that deity, and as he was traveling, one day he met one strange renunciate. He was dressed as a renunciate, but he was carrying a bow and arrow. So Prahlad thought, this looks like some sort of hypocrite who is abusing the principles of religion. So he challenged him to a fight, and he declared boldly, I will defeat you. So they fought for several days, and at night they'd sleep, and in the morning they'd get up and fight again. In the morning, Prahlad would get up first of all and worship a deity that he was carrying with him. So one morning he made a very nice garland from forest flowers, put it on his deity as he was worshiping his deity. Then shortly after he got up, picked up his weapons to continue the fight, he saw this unusual renunciate was wearing the garland. And then he understood, oh, this is my Lord. So he surrendered to the Lord. But then the interesting little twist at the end is that he asked the Lord, he said, I'm a Kshatriya, and I vowed I would defeat you. But now, what do I do now?